Hello and welcome back to the Ice World podcast. I'm Nadia Frontier, and in this podcast I speak to the ordinary people who do extraordinary jobs in the polar regions as part of the British Antarctic Survey. In this episode, we're chatting to Phil Coleman and Henry Kurzweil, both carpenters at two Antarctic stations, Phil at Halley and Henry at Bird Island. Both are very different stations with different requirements, from the day-to-day work like refitting doors and repairing mooring docks to having to come up with ingenious solutions to problems when the nearest hardware store is thousands of miles away. I recently spoke to both carpenters while they were still on station. So Phil, welcome to the Ice World podcast. Let's start with you. Could you introduce yourself and tell us how you ended up being a carpenter in Antarctica?
So my name's Phil. I've done about six seasons for Bass now. Originally when I started, I worked at Rotherer as a chef. But my sort of passion was woodwork. And to get a foot in the door, because I had a lot of background in cookery, that's how I got down here. And then whilst I was at Rotherer, I worked on a few projects and just lended a hand and stuff. And then I'd always wanted to go to Halley. So eventually when I applied to go to Halley, I had to be a GA because there was already carpenters there, but did a similar sort of thing where I went in as a GA and helped out on a load of carpentry projects and just generally, you know, just sort of got involved. And then when there was a space came up, that's how I eventually became the carpenter down here.
No way. That's a crazy story. Did you have you came down as a chef, and then during that time when you left and went back to the real world, did you train and get like carpentry qualifications, or is it just a skill set you always had?
It's a skill set that I'd always had, but for Bass, it was very, because I didn't have any of the qualifications on paper, but I had the ability. It was easier for me to become a chef because I had a lot of background and qualifications in that. So it was always kind of it wasn't a sly way of getting in, but it was I always wanted to come down and be a carpenter. I think the first season was eight and a half months because it was over COVID and stuff. So I think it was supposed to be five and it ended up being eight and a half.
Wow. So that's a summer season that's 8.5 months.
Yeah. So basically we had, because obviously when COVID hit, you couldn't get people in or people out and everything. So we basically had to stay on and sort of cover the chefs that couldn't come in. And then we all came back on a ship instead of flying home. So we were on the Hebridean Sky.
I love that you went down to Rotherham with the intention of being a chef and then became a carpenter. That is absolutely amazing. And then because Halley is a summer only station, what do you do for the other half of the year when you're back in the UK?
So I'm a musician. I've been a musician for about 25 years. I'm a drummer and a vocalist, and I play in a few bands. And also I do just joinery work. I've got my own joinery business called Beck Cottage Wood Design. I've got a relatively large workshop with CNC machine and a lot of bits and pieces in there. So yeah, anything with timber, basically.
Wow, Phil, many strings to your bow. That is impressive.
A few.
And Henry, welcome to you. So you're calling us live from Bird Island Research Station. You're just about to leave on the Sir David Attenborough. Can you tell us your background and how you ended up in the position where you are today?
My background's sort of always been chipping. I grew up in a little historic town called Shrewsbury, and where everything's really, really old. So everything's always breaking or falling apart. So it's a great trade to get into. And I've always sort of had a bit of a fascination of old buildings anyway. For example, Rowley's house is in Shrewsbury, and that's like one of the big attractions, and working on buildings like that, something I've always wanted to do. I like to be outside as well. So like half of the year or three quarters of the year, depending on the weather, you're outside anyway. So you're sort of hits that mark. When I first applied or found out about this, I was like, yeah, I definitely want to come down. I definitely want to do this. And when I saw this on Facebook of all places, I thought, yes, yeah, I'm going to apply for that straight away. That is for me. That's what I want to do.
Amazing. So when did you start your first season going down to Rotherham, working on the VLF, which stands for Very Low Frequency Hut, working with radar engineers?
Yes. That was season before this, so it would be 2024 to 2025. And I went down in November and I came back around March. So it was quite a short summer season, but we only had like the one project.
So what does a typical working day look like for you? Let's start with you, Henry.
To be honest, it's pretty much the same as the UK. First, for the start, anyway, I wake up, have a coffee, have a bit of toast, and then sort of have a discussion of what we're going to do. For example, working down on the jetty, which was absolutely freezing when we first got here because it was just like that ice blast and wind coming at you. But you sort of adjust pretty quickly, I find. You do have these moments where you'll look around and be like, oh my God, I got fur seals to my left and Gen 2s to my right. And you sort of take a second, just like, where the hell am I? This is crazy.
Oh, wow. And also Bird Island is notorious for having actually worse weather than the UK, believe it or not. So like you said about those icy cold winds, and unfortunately not like King Edward Point, but you're always just kept in this cloud of relatively bad weather.
But then you do get those like occasional days where it's just like the sun comes out and it's just like fantastic to look around and just sit on the beach really and just take it all in, because it's like, wow, this station is quite amazing in the nice weather.
And then so moving over from the rain to Halley on the Brunt ice shelf, you're basically constantly in snow. You don't really get rain over there in the summer. How's a typical day for you, Phil?
There's quite a few jobs that we're involved in on the carpentry side of things. We work closely with the steelies that are down there, the steel guys, because we've got a couple of estates jobs that need doing, such as we raise the station every year. So we get accumulation, and basically we can raise the legs about 1.5 metres every time. But that's a big process involving bulldozers and snow ploughs and everything like that. So we have to raise the leg, pack it full of snow, and then bring them all down. And then when they're all raised up, then we can raise the whole station. But on the carpentry side of things, it's basically just maintaining the building. We've got a lot of time when the building's left to its own devices, because it's fully automated during the winter. So for about 9 months of the year, it runs itself. So when we come back, we have to, you know, make sure all the doors open and close as they should. And if there's shelves that need putting up and bits and pieces. There's a large project going on at the moment, which is a refurbishment of an accommodation building. One thing I like about Halley is there's no 2 days are the same, really. One day you could be, like I said, fixing fire doors. The next minute you're packing crates for a specific science project that needs to go back to the UK. And then the next minute you're shoveling snow underneath the hydraulic leg to raise the base.
And also, how do you get your materials down there? If you say you're refurbishing an accommodation block, where do these resources arrive from? Like, you don't get resupply very often on the Brunt ice shelf.
No, so we've got a relief currently sort of once every 2 years. There's a lot of planning involved in them. So we had a relief this year which went to plan. There was a few problems just with the height of the ice shelf and stuff like that, and ship cranes and bits and pieces, but we got a lot of the stuff off. At the beginning of next season we'll fly a few bits and pieces in, and then the rest of it comes on the ship. You plan everything 2 years ahead of when you're going to actually be doing it. You can't run down the road to the shop to get some screws or some timber, so you need to make sure that it's all there when you need it.
Do you get into situations where you are improvising and you have jobs that are not able to be planned 2 years in advance? Like you say, you're building a science crate spontaneously. Not everything can be anticipated. Is there an element of like redundancy in the resources you have available to you?
We're all very, very good at problem solving with what we have down there. And that also helps in the real world as well. When we get back, I found myself being able to fix things and make things out of nothing. We call it wombling down at Halley. You might have a specific job to do, and you know, the whoever's in the plumbing department might have, you know, you might have spotted something that they've got that you need, and they might have something that they need, and everything, and everybody just works together, and in the end it gets done.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it, having a cup of tea in the plumber's workshop and being like, oh, I could use that for a science.
Yeah, what's that down there for? Are you finished with that?
Yeah. And Henry, is the job like you imagined it to be? Rotherhithe and Bird Island are a pretty stark contrast. Are you able to be involved much in the science projects? Like you said, you started off very much working with like engineering-based meteorology projects. At Rotherhithe, what's it now like at Bird Island?
It's different, but it's kind of similar, getting involved with like the ZFAs and stuff. Like you'll go out with them, helping them out with their penguins.
Zoological field assistants, ZFAs?
That's it, yeah. We'll go out with them when they're doing their penguin counts, or with the SEAL team, helping with the pups. And it's bizarre, but it's so amazing to be a part of it.
You don't get that in Shrewsbury.
No, you don't.
How many people do you have on station right now at Bird Island?
I think there's 11 of us. Yeah, it's 11 of us. Compared to Rotherer, I mean, Rotherer, you get like, well, I think it's about 136 at one point. In some ways, it's quite nice because you're all working together. You're all doing like events and stuff. One of the Albatross team, Hannah, most recently organized like a carnival game night. And we go from like building and room to room, all doing all these different types of games. And it's great. And depending on our work schedule, most weekends I'll like have a chippy school where people, I'll teach people how to make like frames. Or one of the big projects at the moment is one of our winterers here who's living with us. She wants to make a table with the Bird Island cut out into some wood and then slotted into some more wood to make it look like a sort of two-tone table. And that's been ongoing for quite a while and it looks awesome so far. And I've really enjoyed it because I've never really had a chance to like teach other than on site with an apprentice.
Yeah, like a really nice exchange of ideas and different professions. Like they're teaching exactly. you about ecology and wildlife and then you can give your skills back. It's pretty unique, isn't it? What's the most unusual thing that you've had to make or fix?
I keep bringing it back to the jetty just because of how funny it was when we first arrived. When we got here with the Pharos and we hopped onto the boat and the boat was bringing us into island, you could see this jetty just slowly sloping into the water. And just some of the things you got to think about. I mean, we ended up ripping off like all the planks, but keeping them intact because we had to sort of build a level below it because it's on it's essentially scaffolding. So we built this level below it, but also taking poles out at the same time. So you're sort of working out like, how can we keep the planks below, slightly below the water, and still be able to work and take out structural poles to reposition them and get it all back in the right place. So it's an actual usable jetty. It's just quite weird because you're battling with like tide times as well, because the tide can come in and you're like working in water up to your knees. You've got a still saw, a podger, which is essentially a little spanner made for scaffolding. And we did have a nut gun, but that fell at a slight dunking into the sea at one point, which once we got that out, it was never working again.
Phil, have you got any unusual implements that you've had to create over there at Harley?
Most of the stuff that I've been involved in has been what you'd call sort of unusual, but for one minute you'll be, you know, you can be fixing fire doors and then all of a sudden you might have one of the scientists comes from the science modules and they say we need you to build a frame that holds a GPR antenna above the ice at a very specific height that needs to get pulled along a sled at about 20 kilometers an hour and then the next minute, you've got somebody from the ice core tent asking you if you can build a table for them to put the ice cores on. And then you're like, yeah, okay. And then somebody says, oh, this 15,000-pound science experiment needs to get back to the UK for fixing. So can we have a really custom-made packing crate for it? And then you're like, yeah, okay. And then so you'll lie there in your in your bunk at the end of the day, and you're like, what? How did I end up making that? A lot of the things are quite unusual, but I've also made some stuff in spare time. I remember when I was at Rotherer, I made a snare drum for my drum kit, and then I made all the parts for the metalwork on it. I made that in the garage on the metal lathe, and I'm not certain, but I reckon that might be the only snare drum that's ever been made in Antarctica.
That is a museum piece. You should definitely.
Yeah. I play it when I play gigs, so I use it.
Love it. Have you got any engravings or Antarctic continent or like Adelaide Island in it or anything?
I've got the obligatory outline of Antarctica in brass. I don't think there's ever been a season for bass where somebody hasn't cut the outline of Antarctica out of something and stuck it on something else. It's the one of the number one things I get asked for when we have the Secret Santa every year at Halley.
It's quite funny you say that, Phil, because when I first got here, there I made a little box which was just something for a bit of fun. It was a little hexagonal box, and coming up to Secret Santa like 2 days before Christmas. One of the team came in and was like, oh, Henry, I'm desperate to make a box. I need to turn it into a cup. And I just looked over to my right and my left. I was thinking, there is literally no time. And I just see this like perfect box. Like, there you go. Take
Do you
it
know
away.
What, have this.
Yeah, basically.
Haven't you had the chance to be a carpenter at Rotherham, Phil? Or is it something that you would consider? Or are you set on Halley?
I'm sort of one of the Halley lot now. I do love Halley. It's amazing. I've always say the same sort of thing. At Halley, you've got a team and a station and a family and a home, I think. And there's a lot of people that go back to Halley every year, and we're great friends. We see each other outside of work and stuff as well. But never say never. I'd go and do something. I'd love to go to the islands and stuff as well. I'd love to go and see that. If it comes up, I'll definitely go.
And Henry, have you got any plans after your season at Bird Island, which is almost over, to go and expand your skills onto other stations?
Yeah, I think so. What I've got my eye on recently was the Port Lockroy, working potentially for, because there's only a really short season there. I saw on their website, I was there about 2 months actually there. I'd really like to do that, because I've been talking to Matt Jobson, because he's done it before and he said it was amazing. You should definitely give it a go. And maybe just go back to Rotherham as well, because Rotherham is awesome. It's just, yeah, it's full on, but it's full on in such a good way because there's so much to do. You've got the skidooing, the ramp as well, just going snowboarding and all the trips and the going out on the plains like Fossil Bluff. I remember my first trip to Fossil Bluff, and you're flying over and you're seeing these insanely blue waters as you're flying over. You're looking and like, is this real? You're looking out the window, just like, I can't believe it. And then you land, you're seeing all these massive rock faces with all the different levels of sort of, I suppose, the years of changes in the rock. It's quite incredible.
So do you think from your collective jobs, both of you working on remote stations, that it's helped your carpentry skills develop in a different sense if you were to pursue these roles in the UK?
I would say it makes you think outside the box even more so.
Yeah, I agree. It's you figure out solutions to things in a completely different way. I find I also slow down with planning now. You kind of boil down the problem into its composite parts. Yeah, you can fix it that way instead of just, you know, sort of going in all guns blazing. You can sort of chill out a little bit and do it that way. But yeah, that's it definitely makes you think a bit more.
I think the biggest thing with working with Bass, outside of Bass, you're like constantly sort of chasing the work, chasing the money, and that's sort of how it goes. And you can sort of like take a step back, be like, right, let's try and plan this out safely. We got, for example, with the VLF hut, on East Beach at Rotherham, you have to pretty much go either all the way around the island to the other side to do it, to get all the materials there, or you go up and over on skidoos. And you've got to admit that you have to get it done before all the snow melts or the ice melts, because it's all just rock otherwise. So you're sort of ferrying these things over. But it's quite a lot of planning, but you have that time to sort of think about it before you do it.
There's no 2 days that are the same at Halley. But it sounds like that in your real day-to-day life, like with the projects you've got, that's also pretty variable.
I've always chosen my jobs that make me happy more than earn me money. Like work happiness, I like a lot more than earning money. You know, I've never been really bothered about it, to be honest. But, you know, there are some hard bits. I must admit, fitting doors and stuff that we have to do at Halley occasionally, I hate fitting doors, especially because 9 times out of 10 down where we are, they're all fire doors, so they're all about 80 kilos a piece. Yeah, luckily we've got Eloise, who's the other carpenter down at Halley. She's fantastic. Yeah, so she takes lead on all that sort of stuff, and she's wicked at it.
Have you worked with a woman carpenter before?
No, can't say I have. No,
first
but it's
time.
I mean, she's fantastic. Yeah. She's we work closely together down there, because it's only me and her there. I've got a tendency as well, from my sort of, without sounding pretentious, like a fine woodworking cabinetry side of things, I'll look at some problems with that sort of fine woodworking head on, and I'm like, it doesn't need to be that sort of precise and everything. And you go, well, actually, it just needs to get screwed to the wall, and that's it. So it doesn't need to be screwed to the wall and sanded to like 600 grit. It's fine.
Yeah. And what about wood in the cold and wet weather? Does it change the way that it warps or its form and the way that you work with it? So like, let's start with Bird Island and like rainy, damp conditions. What about storing this material?
It's terrible in every way, shape and form. It's two completely different things here. So we were here to change as well all the doors and a lot of the floors as well, because I did a moisture test a couple of years ago just to see if there was any moisture in the floors of the new Pippet house, and there was. And we took up the floor of the gym first. It's all chipboard and it can't really get wet, so as soon as it gets wet it expands and then turns to dust, and all these timber joists were just like covered in the weirdest mold you've ever seen in your life. It looks like an alien. It's got like tentacles and it's just like, what even is that? So you're like sort of scooping it up, just like looking at it, just like, what on earth? And then so there's been a lot of that, a lot of repair work in that sense. You take any wood out of the wood store, then run it through a thicknesser, which is a tool which essentially just brings timber down to a certain thickness that you want it, because it's a really nice clean finish on it. You leave that in a warm workshop for about 12 hours and it will just go like this, like whoop. And then so you just got to keep reworking it and like sort of thicknessing it and getting it. I've been in the workshop and I've just trying all sorts of different things, putting a bit of moisture into the wood and like clamping it down and leaving it for like 3 days for it to like dry back into its original shape. And it's a bit of a nightmare, but it's quite funny to see what you make and how it comes out by the end, and just working around that.
And what about the cold feel? Like, do you have to make these doors that keep out the snow? And is the wood affected by really cold temperatures?
All of the external doors that we've got they're like airlock doors. They're massive, great big steel things most of the time. But one of the things, one of the sort of a unique thing with Halley is every single building that is there either gets raised or moved every year. So we'll get there at the beginning of the year, and I've always got the same thing. You know, if there's anything wrong with doors and stuff like that, everybody sort of comes to us, and it'll be a case of you know, the my cupboard door doesn't shut. And you're like, yeah, I wouldn't expect it to, because the whole building moves. It's cold. And then we've raised the building. We've dragged it halfway down the skiway. But then, yeah, so there's a lot of adjustment in it as well that we need to do every year. But as far as our stuff goes, is obviously it's one of the biggest deserts on the planet, so it's actually really dry where we are, and because we don't get any rain, we've kind of got the other way where everything's so dry that it's very brittle. A lot of the timber that we've got has been down there for years, sometimes dozens of years, and it's so brittle that you've got to work with it in a specific way, otherwise it just sort of not disintegrates. But another thing to worry about is because it's on an ice shelf and there's no mountains, there's no hills, there's no nothing, you've got to be careful when you're moving sheet goods about, because you essentially, as soon as you pick up a sheet of plywood, you've made a sale. So, and then you can get, yeah, the many times I've been sort of taken, and you end up about 15 feet from where you started without a sheet of plywood in your hand. It's quite fun sometimes.
The challenges of Antarctica. And so, yeah, Phil, you're on season 6, you think, because you've done too many, you can't remember.
Yeah, they all meld into one. It's like festivals.
So are you going to continue going back to Halley, do you think, for as long as you can?
Yeah. The season length, the job, it suits me well. And also as well, we get a little bit of a thing. There's many people that work at Halley. I'm sure that a lot of them will say the same thing. Is like, once you've been to Halley, it's kind of it gets you a little bit. It gets under your skin, and you kind of, you work. Obviously, we work for Bass and we work for Science, but we also work for the base, because it's an incredibly unique thing. The actual Halley station. It's unbelievable. Some of the way things work, and the engineering that's gone into it is unreal.
And also amazing that it just continues to run for 6 months of the year. Like it's not just like it's left dormant.
Yeah, so we got the microturbine and yeah, so that all works. And then yeah, basically the whole automation, and obviously that's got a lot of benefits for carbon and stuff like that. It's impressive. It's really good.
And Henry, how long will it take you to leave Bird Island now? So what's your plan?
I'm here for about 2 more weeks. The ship comes in, and then we're doing a bit of a cruise round to the other islands. So we're going to Cygni, KP, Camp Geddes to take that down. That's one of the old stations, or just huts more like, actually, which has been around for so long now, and it's just been left completely dormant. We'll be taking that down over the course of about 12 days, I think. And then we're back to the Falklands. I would hope to get the chance to go around the Falklands again a little bit, because on our trip down here, we were at the Falklands for about a week, which I thought was great. I absolutely love the Falklands, and seeing it, because it's not a place I would have ever thought of going. Being able to go down to Stanley and just see what it's like is awesome.
It's not a cheap place to get to.
No,
with the only flight you can get in basically being controlled by the MOD.
Yeah, from Bryce.
And to conclude, a question for both of you. What does Antarctica mean to you?
Antarctica has made me meet some people that I never would have got the opportunity to meet. Some people who are absolutely fantastic in their fields and stuff. It's allowed me to see places and wildlife that I never would have even dreamed of seeing. But it also instills in you a feeling of just how small we all are. I think actually getting to Antarctica makes you realise just how big the world is, and how many days it takes you to get down there, and it leaves you with just how beautiful it can be as well. I've seen things in Antarctica that I've never dreamed of seeing, and I'll remember until I'm gone.
Yeah, it's like people I've never, I would have thought I'd meet in my lifetime. Being part of the experience, sharing the experience of everyone else as well. Just a general sense of community as well, where everyone's sort of working together, especially on the smaller stations. You're all coming together for the same sort of result, and you never really have that in anywhere, I think. Definitely something special. I did say to Emma Edwards, who is our station leader, that I would show off this, because this is her office. Stretching with the headphones. This is her sourdough that she is making, and she has made some pretty incredible breads and pizzas with it.
Okay, so let's actually describe this sourdough. Let's bring that jar back. Describe it, Henry.
Okay, how would I describe this?
Well, the lid's open, so, for a start.
Yeah, it looks like it's trying to get out.
Yeah, it's definitely trying to get out.
Does that always be kept in the fridge?
No, apparently it's supposed to be left like that so it can breathe, which sounds even worse.
Have you ever seen The Thing?
You know what? I saw that the other week. So, yeah. Ugh. So, a mason jar with flour and water sort of trying to climb out of the top. That's how I describe it.
I like it. So, that's what Antarctica means to you, just to conclude there, Henry.
Yeah, just to conclude, sourdough.
Sourdough starter trying to
climb. Sourdough.
And everybody, this is the Carpenters of Antarctica. It's been a pleasure, Phil and Henry, to have you on the Ice World podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You never know when the urge to head to Antarctica will strike, or the chance of a lifetime will come up. You might be browsing Facebook like Henry, or looking at the British Antarctic job pages. Go for it. You never know. One application could change your life. And if you enjoy Ice World, tell us. Make sure you leave a review for us wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, 5-star reviews are our favourite, but they really do help listeners find us quicker. I'm Nadia Frontier, and thank you for listening.